Hey there, welcome to the Student to CEO podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Mason. We're talking to entrepreneurs who launched their business at a young age and they're now killing the game. Tune in to our episodes as these guests spill the dirt on taking that leap into entrepreneurship just like they did. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of the Student to CEO podcast. Joining me today is Kristen Ruby. Kristen is the CEO of Ruby Media Group, an award-winning public relations and media relations agency in Westchester County, New York. With more than 13 years of experience in the industry, Chris is a sought-after media relations strategist, personal branding specialist, and public relations consultant. Kristen graduated from Boston University's College of Communication with a major in public relations and is a founding member of the Young Entrepreneurs Council, as well as the host of the Chris Ruby podcast show. Kristen, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Ashley. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Now, I'd love if you could share with our audience to start off what you do and what led you there.
Sure. So my company is Ruby Media Group, and I do public relations, personal branding, social media, and content marketing for different business owners. And so basically, I take people and I turn them into brands. And my backstory is basically that I went to Boston University's College of Communications. I had 13 internships by the time that I graduated. So I had a lot of different experience in different areas of the communications industry. And I remember when I was ready to graduate, I was talking with one of my professors about a capstone project. And, you know, everyone was talking about where they were going to work. And for me, I had this idea and I said, well, what about me starting my own company? And I remember sort of like the professor at the time, like, you know, sort of shunning the idea as if it wasn't an option. And I knew myself really well, even back then, to sort of say, no, like this is an option for me. And that's ultimately what I ended up doing. And, you know, I think I had an internship lined up for a job that maybe I did for a week or two after graduation. But I knew that I was always going to work for myself. So what's fascinating about my backstory is that I've really never worked for anyone else. I've only worked for myself. And that has some pros and cons. Because On the one hand, entrepreneurship is great. When you graduate college and you launch your business, on the other hand, you miss some of the core management training, I would say skills that you would get if you had a manager or a boss that you were working for. So I've had to work very hard on my own, I think, to make up for those skill sets with extra training.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you mentioned the part about the professor that you were speaking with said that it wasn't really an option, or made it seem like it wasn't really an option for you to go off and start your own business, because that tends to be kind of like the norm, is people not really accepting this idea. So what did you do to kind of get past that? I don't necessarily want to say disapproval, but kind of get past that doubt that other people were almost reflecting onto you.
Yeah, I mean, so what, it's interesting. I did a capstone project and I did it for another business owner in Los Angeles. And it was this amazing like marketing communications plan that was really supposed to be a senior project. And I really wasn't thinking of going in this direction, but I gave it to this business owner in LA and he said, you know, you could really get paid for this. And I was like, what? You know, it was just not like, it was my senior capstone project. And I guess it was an impressive senior project, but I, you know, was not thinking that I could get paid for it. And I think him saying that to me really was a game changer. Because when he said, like, you could get paid for this, I thought, well, what if he's right? Like, why don't I try? And yeah. I always urge people today, especially people who are in college or any students, like, they have so many skills that, you know, business owners and agencies want, whether it's social media marketing, you know, basic keyword research, video production, video editing, podcast transcription, all of these different tools that they, you know, digital natives intuitively know how to do and don't need that extra training to know how to do that. Those are the skills we want. And they just speak that language. And so, you know, I do a lot of teaching on Facebook Live too. And when I speak to journalism students, I always tell people, like, you know, don't underestimate yourself and the power that you have as a digital native, because you really do hold a lot of the power in terms of the hiring process, that people want these skills.
They do, and you're absolutely right. I mean, these skills are highly sought after right now by any type of company really looking to optimize their online presence and really like the technology behind it. So one thing that you mentioned was that you had never worked for anyone else after graduating from college, which was the same with me too. And so what was that process like of just immediately jumping into being your own boss rather than getting that corporate experience? Because I know you mentioned you had to really focus on doing everything and working harder yourself because you didn't have that experience, but what was actually taking that leap like for you?
So I think it included a lot of sacrifices. So when I first graduated, I guess I probably lived home maybe for a year, whereas like everyone else had moved to the city in Manhattan and they were like living with their friends and living this great life. You know, I was not doing that because I was probably trying to save money. I think I graduated with $500 in my bank account. To this day, I've had no outside investment. So I've, you know, it's do or die every month for me. Like, it's still the same. Mm-hmm. I think that's what people don't realize. You know, there's so much glamour around this female entrepreneurial lifestyle and industry. And I wrote an article once on Observer about it. I said, the girl boss you see on Instagram is not the girl boss in real life. You know, there's a lot of sacrifice and a lot of things that go into living this life, whether it's putting off a relationship or a marriage or a family of your own, maybe later than your peers, or living at home or doing all of these things for your business instead of really, I guess, for yourself, for your own life. And those are just things that people don't talk about. I think there's also higher levels of depression sometimes and inherent loneliness when you don't have that other a team around you all the time to bounce things off of. That can sometimes, lead to other issues. And I also think this sort of mentality of a roller coaster of up and down, that never really changes. You know, it's still 13 years in. I still don't even know that I've gotten used to it. You know, you could go so far with a prospect and think you're going to work with them. And then suddenly they say, are you available for a call today? And then it's like all done and out the window, right? So I don't know that is any different or any better like than the first day that I started my business. And I guess I would love people to understand that, like, you know. And I spoke to someone else about it the other day and they said, oh, well, your problem is you care too much. You have to not care. But I'm never going to not care.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so important to really care about your business, the people that you're working with, so many different aspects of it. And I love that you mentioned the whole roller coaster. I actually saw this graphic. I think it was put together by the Rising Tide Society for anyone who is familiar with that group. But basically, this graphic just does show the ups and downs of entrepreneurship, where one day you're so high on all the successes that you've had, and then the next day it's like, boom, you're down at the bottom. So you're right. It doesn't really get past that or change as you go into more years of being an entrepreneur. So besides the sacrifices that you've gone through in this roller coaster mentality, what else was the most difficult part of starting your business while young?
I think that, again, sort of just like these core foundational elements, like I talked about, and there are certain structural things that you need in place to build a business. And there are also, I remember, there's just sort of societal and structural demands that if you are working with other people, you know, so for me, I work 24/7. I expect that someone's going to answer me at night or on the weekends. And so I suppose there's a certain sector of corporate America where they say, oh, you don't have to do that, right? Like, you can just shut off after 5 o'clock. But I think if you have an entrepreneurial mentality, that just doesn't exist. So the challenge I've had in terms of with other talent is finding other people that care about my business as much as I do. And so I think, you know, that's hard, right? Because no one's ever going to care about your business as much as you do, unless they're a partner in the company. And that has been something that has been, I suppose, hard for me to accept.
So did you end up getting past that by being able to bring on other team members who do have kind of like that mentality, or is it something that you're still trying to get the ins and outs of?
I think it's something that I think we're always looking for it. You know, I think that is, if you talk to any entrepreneur, I think they get really excited when they hire someone or when they find someone that they think is going to be that person. And, you know, I think there's always sort of this continuous, process of expectation setting that goes along with that. And whether that's with talent or even with clients, one of the most challenging aspects of the public relations industry is expectation setting. And people are buying one thing and, you know, they don't necessarily understand what they're buying. And so you're continuously training the client on what it is that they're getting from you.
Absolutely. On the opposite end of the difficulty of starting your business, what was the most rewarding, would you say?
The most rewarding part of my business? So I think what's really, I always sort of like to say that I'm like a painter, but I like to paint Google results through my work. And so it's really rewarding for me when I go to, I sort of do a before and after of a case study, and I look at Google News results and I can see the difference. And it looks like a painting. When someone comes to me, they start out as a blank canvas on Google. And when I'm done with them, it's painted with lots of different results of them in the news. And that is really exciting for me. So I also specialize in a lot of PR for doctors and medical professionals. So, you know, that is really rewarding for me because I write content that ultimately helps people with health issues get connected to those doctors. So if that content can save a life, that is really fulfilling for me.
That's a great perspective. So not only being able to help your clients, but also help your clients' clients.
Yeah. That's the thing that keeps me going every day. And every day I wake up and I say, what am I going to create today? You know, that is really my mentality. What am I going to create? Is it, you know, is it a podcast? Is it going to be a long form piece of content? Is it a social media post? Is it a story? I love the ability to create. And I think one of the things that I was thinking about last night in preparation for this interview is really an area that I think people or specifically clients need help with is understanding how to best work with a creative professional. Creatives are a little different than other professionals, right? We need that freedom and that room to create. That's why we have our own business. That's why we don't work for someone else, for many of us. So, you know, the more you sort of stay on top of someone and say, like, what did you do today? What are you working on? What's the strategy? That's going to push the creative away from you. And it's actually going to make their end product worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And like also too with that, if someone tells you what they think should be done, it really puts a damper on your own creative ideas and be like, well, no, I want to try this because I think the results are going to be so much better.
Yes, exactly. And so this is a really sort of weird phenomenon of working in this industry where people hire you, but then they tell you how to do what it is that they hired you to do.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't know any other industry that operates that way. And so I know after speaking with many industry professionals, that's definitely a pain point in our field. And it's funny, even interns who've worked with me have all said that. Like they have said that is the most surprising thing of working for a PR firm. They really thought like if someone hired a publicist, like they would take their advice, and they didn't think there would be as much friction in that process.
Absolutely. It's like these people wouldn't go to their lawyer when they're getting legal advice and tell them what they think the legal advice should be.
Exactly. Exactly. And I just want people to understand, listen, I know that media, like even if you don't understand how it works, trust the person you hired and trust the process. Like give them that freedom to create. Because when you take that away from them, and if you try and make an entrepreneur feel like an employee, you're literally going to do the opposite of what you intended, and you're going to get a terrible result from them. So I think that's one thing I would just urge people, especially like in this current chaotic situation, don't try and take entrepreneurs and turn them into something they're not. The reason they're working for themselves is because they're not going to flourish in that corporate environment. Understand that, respect that, and work with their strengths. Don't try and pull out their weakness and make them cater to you or your process, because ultimately you're not going to get the work that you hire them to do if you try and do that.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head with that. And Chris, with starting your own public relations firm, what do you think led to your success with that after being in the industry for about 13 years?
So I think I'm this rare, I'm a pretty rare breed in terms of PR because I'm also a national TV commentator and pundit. So I think I have a really good perspective of how cable news and TV really works from both sides of the camera. And I think just being on the other side, like rather than just sending out PR pitches, I see them anytime I was booked for a segment. And so I naturally speak and write that language because I've just been a guest so many times. And I think that has been invaluable experience for me, and my clients certainly benefit from that because I speak the language of television, and that's transcended into many other areas, including podcast booking, right? I can just naturally write pitches in a way that I know is helpful for someone because I saw how I was booked, and that's how I book the people that hire me.
I think that's great, of just being able to take your own experience from the other side and apply it to your own clients. And I can imagine too that by you being booked on different podcasts and being the national TV commentator, that you probably have a ton of connections because of that too, more connections than you would if you didn't have that experience.
I certainly do. Yeah, I do have a lot of connections from doing that. I always sort of like to try and keep them separate though, because I like to say that, you know, my career is not something that's going to be transferable to someone who hires me. And I do think that's a misconception. You know, people will see that I'm on national TV, but what they don't see is that I had to do local TV, getting up at 3 a.m. for 4.5 years and drive an hour and a half each way to ever be able to make it to national TV. And so it's not just like that you're going to hire a PR firm and you can get on national TV really fast. Like, that wasn't my experience. Maybe it's going to be yours, but I want people to understand the actual long, hard road to success from A to B. And so I think what I see a lot of is that people want a shortcut to doing that. And hiring a firm isn't necessarily a shortcut. You know, it's they have the connections and maybe you want access to those connections, but you still need to do the work on your end to make it happen.
Definitely. And that's another thing too, that I feel like is definitely a misconception within this public relations, marketing, communications field, is that people think the results and success is instant, and it's absolutely not. If you want to be able to get true results and have all of these amazing things happen, as you shared, you need to be willing to put in the work.
Yeah. And so you're totally right about that. So anyone that hires us, I say, you have to be willing to commit at least an hour a day to working with your agency. Because one of the biggest issues we encounter is people say, I hired you to do the work. Why do I have to be involved? Just make magic happen. And I say, because you're the expert. You know, like, you are the one, I can't ghost for you. You need to be part of the process. So I think people are always a little bit confused with why PR is so time intensive, and also the quick turnaround times as well.
Yes, absolutely. And Kristen, if there was one thing you wish you did differently when starting your business, or one thing you know now that you wish you knew then, what would it be and why?
Oh, well, I mean, so I think just one thing that I'm very focused on right now is contract law. And, you know, who knows, maybe even possibly looking at law school, just because I spend so much time editing and reviewing contracts. Even though I'm not an actual attorney, it's such a big part of my job, whether it's a brand deal or, you know, anything like that that we're working on with a client. So I think that I would have, like, my first contract of the client was probably 2 pages. Now my contracts are like 13 to 15 pages. And for some people that can put them off. But for me, I basically, like, if you get a new car, right? What do you sign at Mercedes? You're signing this very large legal document that covers anything that can possibly happen. So I think that we need to really take that same approach to the creative services industry. And I think we really sell ourselves short a lot of the time because we just want to get that deal, or you want to close that deal. And you know that if you send them a very long document, the likelihood of that closing is going to decrease. However, I think it's better to have all that in writing up front. And if someone doesn't want to sign that or work with you, then maybe they're not the right fit for your agency. Because the truth is, if you're already having problems at that point, you're most likely going to have all the same problems if they become a client.
100%. And I love that you're thinking about law school, because I think that really highlights the importance of viewing different parts in your field where you can learn more in order to be better at what you do. I mean, there's always something more you can be learning each day that will add more value to your services and how you support your clients in different ways. So I think that's great.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. It's always, I always feel like I get thrown in these different directions just because of running the business. So for example, like, I had gotten into the master's program at the executive master's program at Newhouse, SIA School of Communications. But the problem is, it was very hard for me to keep doing it while running my business. So, you know, hopefully at some point I can have you know, the freedom to do these other things that I want to do, because I'm, as part of my company culture, continuous learning is extremely important. And, you know, I've been thriving in the pandemic. I think introverts, this is our time because, you know, I feel like I'm doing all of these conferences in a different course every night, or buying these bundles and stacks of learning. And it's like, I just feel like there's so many things to learn. I'm addicted to learning. I can't stop with all of these courses. So it's really exciting.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, being able to just find different resources that will help to bring you to that next level is so great. So how do you actually continue to do that? Like, find different resources that you think would be valuable to really invest in, that you think will be able to bring more value to what you're offering to your current clientele?
So I always, in terms of what courses to look for, I look at different areas that I feel like, oh, we really want to expand our footprint here or become the go-to person in this area. So right now we're very much so focused on content marketing and SEO. And I know that we're also doing some other stuff around training with Google Analytics, and we just became a partner certified with another SEO program. So I think in terms of figuring out what courses to take the ones that you feel like I'm interested in this, but also this could be somewhat challenging, and that's, you know, sort of push through that. And that's the toughest part of learning, right? That first hurdle. But then once you really wrap your head around it, you can get really into it.
That's great advice, especially because with a lot of people, I mean, there's so many different things that they want to learn, but don't even know where to start. So I think just by thinking about exactly what you mentioned, like looking at the areas that you want to be an expert in or the go-to source in, and being able to kind of capitalize on different strategies from there.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, so when I started out, I feel like I was very much so on the conference and circuit, like scene, and going to all of these different things. And what happened is that over the years, I guess I stopped wanting to travel to go to all of those things. And there was this gap in that. And so now I feel like I've really made up for lost time with taking all of these things online. And so I just think there's this tremendous opportunity right now for people out there listening to this, where, you know, the sky is the limit. So maybe you don't have the funds to travel across the country for the conference. That's okay. You know, maybe you never could go to CES, but now you can, because it's going to be online this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, that's the same with Inbound by HubSpot. I went to that marketing conference a few years ago, and if you want to be able to get the full package, it's pretty hefty to pay out of it, especially if you're not from the Boston area. And so being able to take advantage of, as you mentioned, all of these new virtual offerings that companies are putting out can do so much for your professional and personal growth.
Exactly. Like, I couldn't agree more with that. And I also think, you know, I don't think people actually realize how much all of these conferences cost to go to, right? Plus the subscriptions, plus the platforms and travel and food and all of these things when you're going to all of them. So I think if you can sort of revise that budget for the upcoming year, and I know there's also student discounts for a lot of these things. So if you're a student, or if you're, you know, in college or listening to this, you certainly have a lot of opportunities there.
Absolutely. And while we're on course of students learning about different things, for the students who really want to get into PR and learn more about it and being able to perhaps work with freelance clients, what do you recommend of kind of getting into the field and in the industry?
Sure. So actually, during the pandemic, I created something called Ruby Media Group PR University. It's a Facebook group that is for free, and it was for people who weren't able to get internships because their internships were canceled. And I post a lot of educational content in there for aspiring publicists. So I can share that link with your listeners. I think it's really helpful. And we also have industry speakers in there as well.
Awesome. Yeah, that would be great for people to take a look through and check out all the awesome stuff that you have going.
Yeah, and I would also say, though, just to answer your question, PR is a challenging thing. It's not like I can just say, oh, here's a book you should read. It's so much is that you really need to be interning and working in the field. And I've had people say that to me, like, you know, the work I'm doing with you is nothing like what I read about in school or the textbook. So it's very hard for me to say this is the one specific resource you should do and this will help you. The best possible thing you could do is just do a remote internship.
Absolutely. And in the opposite end of that, what would you recommend for the brands who may not necessarily have the budget to work with a professional like yourself to get featured in various publications? Like, what are your tips for being able to really get featured in various places that would help make them more known in their industry?
So for that, I would say to focus on owned content rather than earned. So if you don't have the budget to hire a PR firm, that's okay. Work on your own content that you're creating that you will live on your website and that you can optimize. There's a lot of different keyword research tools that can help you with that process. So I think, you know, that's what I'd recommend. I mean, we're seeing this fundamental transformation right now with social media platforms, with people being blocked or censored, or all these different areas. So I always say focus on something you own rather than leased property. And social media platforms are leased property. At least with your website, you own that and you have that content. It can't be taken from you. I mean, it can be stolen and then you can do a cease and desist, but that's a whole other issue.
I could not agree with your advice more, because also being in the marketing industry, I have come across so many people who really just want to put all of their time and effort into only social media. And I'm like, you cannot put all of your eggs in one basket, because God forbid you do not own that account. Instagram or Facebook or whatever platform you're using owns it. And so you have the potential for it to be taken away from you in the snap of a finger. And so focusing on building your email list and publishing content on your own website is huge. So thank you for bringing that up, because it's an important thing for people to know and understand.
Yeah. I mean, if I see one more Instagram course about how to grow your Instagram following, I just can't take it anymore. I mean, I just think so much of the advice out there is bad and it's not helpful, right? So what if you grow, if you grow your Instagram following to a million people, like, tell me, how is that helping your business? Is it helping your business or does it help your ego? If it's not helping the bottom line, I want you to really think about that. And so much of the time, people don't think about that. You want to do things that actually have a measurable, tangible impact on growth. And, you know, that's strange for me to say as someone who specializes in branding and PR, where oftentimes I say it's not about that, but at some point it has to go back to that.
Yes, absolutely. And it's like, because there could be someone who has 10,000 followers on their Instagram account that sought after 10K and they're not really making any money in their business. But then there could be someone who has 1,000 followers and they're six figures. So it's really kind of like a vanity number. And unless people are actually taking actions who are following you, then it's not really an important stat to look at.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest mistake that I see that I see millennials making right now is they spend a lot of time on Instagram, TikTok, or Snapchat platforms that they like, that their friends are on. But when I say, what do you use, Facebook or LinkedIn? They go, no, like, you know, I don't use it at all, or that's not cool, or whatever it is that they say. I go, but those are where Facebook groups are. Like, that is where business is happening. It's not where your friends are or what you like. It's where the people are that you want to work with. And I think you have to have that fundamental shift of thinking around. I mean, it's the same thing with us as marketers, right? It's not, I have to be where my target audience is. It's not that I have to be where I want to be or where I like to be, because they're two very different things.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so glad you mentioned that point as well, because I mean, I know not only just millennials, but I feel like a lot of people in general are moving away from Facebook, or they don't really think that there's much traction or results there. But I did the math because I was curious, and I realized that in 2019, 76% of my clients came from Facebook groups alone. And I'm like, that is a crazy number. And I'm like, this goes to show people that, especially depending on what your business is and your industry and stuff along those lines, platforms like Facebook and LinkedIn can be huge for you.
Completely agree. Yeah, I think it's a gold mine of opportunity and leads that some people just don't even see, because I would look past the what is cool, what is not cool factor.
Yes.
Because when you're looking to drive growth and revenue and make money, like, the cool factor should not matter.
Absolutely. And along those lines, why do you think it's so important for young individuals to start a business?
Because I think that they can take pride in something they own. I think that one thing that I've noticed across the board is that the education system right now, from the people I've worked with, I've noticed a common thread, and they've actually said this to me, which is that they've all said, our college teaches us that they tell us what to do when we do it, and you're asking us to think on our own and have creative freedom and come up with things, but that's not what we're used to. And so that's a little bit jarring to me, right? To sort of hear that the education system is telling people not to think and not to create, and here's the rubric and do it this way. That's not the real world. You know, as an agency owner, I have to solve problems. A client doesn't come to me and really sort of say, here's what to do, do it. Every day I have to figure out what to do. Every day is like this treasure hunt figuring out what problem am I solving? What am I looking for? Diagnosing that. And so I think that as educators, we really need to change that narrative in the school system today to reactivate that part of the students' brain and learning or and telling them and forcing that they're thinking their creative ability matters. And right. When you get out of school, no one's going to really be, I suppose an employer could tell you that, but if you're entrepreneurial in nature, no one's going to tell you anything and you always have to figure it out on your own. So I think just understanding that is critical.
Absolutely. And being able to take that initiative of being that problem solver, as you shared, and being able to think outside of the box, because that is what will end up putting you so much farther in your career and experience.
Yep, I agree.
Chris, you've shared so much helpful advice with our listeners throughout this episode that I know that they will totally appreciate. But if there was one last piece of advice you could share for someone who may just be starting out, what would it be?
So my last piece of advice would be to work with people that you like and work with people you support. And that if you wouldn't want the client at your dinner table for Thanksgiving, don't work with the client. And I think it took me over a decade to sort of understand this very simple concept that life doesn't need to be as hard as we make it. You know, like you should really truly work with people that you like. And I realized this, there's a one client that I've worked with for, you know, over 10 years now. And when my dad had gotten sick at one point afterwards, when my dad was in the hospital, that client sent flowers, right? And so that was so meaningful to me. And so I always think about that. On the hardest of days in my mind, I can always go back to that and remember that. But if you have people that you work with that make you sort of feel like a commodity, like you're a line item, like you're dispensable, disposable, and you don't matter, that you are going to internalize that. And you do matter. And your work matters. And you're here for a reason. And you want to keep that channel within yourself open. And the best way to keep that open as a creator is to work with people that you feel good about. Because if you start to feel bad, your ability to create will shrink. And I want to see you soar. So just always remember that. And, you know, hopefully me sharing that with you will help, you know, save you years of your life of some of the mistakes that I made along the way. You don't have to, work with people that aren't nice to you. And I think just in terms of the legal aspect of this, I think employees are protected. If your employer goes off on you, you're protected and there's sort of recourse for that. As a contractor or a freelancer or agency owner or anything else, you're not. Right? There's actually nothing in place that really protects us if someone treats us terrible. The only thing you can do is to terminate that contract. So what happens is so much of the time as entrepreneurs, we stay. We stay because we need the work. But my goal, one of my biggest goals, you know, for this upcoming year and beyond is to teach people that you don't have to stay in something that's bad for you.
Yes, yes. Yes. I have to highlight and repeat one of the lines that you said throughout that because it was just so powerful. And I think it really embodies this whole mentality that people really need to have. And that line was, if you don't want that client sitting at your table for Thanksgiving dinner, then don't work with that client. And that's just like, whoa, powerful, but so true.
Yeah. I mean, it really makes me sad. It makes me so sad that I see so many entrepreneurs who sort of stay in these things year after year because they don't know that there's another way. And I think especially for women entrepreneurs, one of the issues that I have is we talk so much about this role of, you know, how to spot, you know, abusive or nasty or terrible behavior in personal relationships. But we spend almost 0% of our time explaining to women how to spot those same traits in professional business relationships. And I think we do women such a disservice because we train them on what this looks like if you're dating someone, but why don't we train them on what those same traits look like if you work with someone? Because you're going to spend just as much time working with someone and it's going to have the same effect on your psyche and your mentality. And so if you continue to sort of choose toxic work relationships year after year, that's going to fundamentally impact you. And so I just hope that we can open a conversation around that in the professional space. It's not anything I've heard talked about. I'm not sure why. I don't know if there's shame around it, but I really think it matters.
Absolutely. And especially too, I mean, we have intuition. And so if something doesn't feel right, then chances are it's really not right. I can say from my own experience that when I was first starting out, I would just accept anyone and everyone to work with, even just because I wanted the money and I wanted the experience. So even if I were speaking this to this person on a sales call or during a consultation and I got this gut feeling like, oh, I really don't think they're a good fit, I ended up doing it anyway because I wanted the money, and boom, what do you know? They weren't a good fit. And I ended up with stress and overwhelm and just really unhappiness. And so it's like, you just need to get past that thought and really listen to your gut and say, yes, if I'm getting this feeling that someone isn't a good fit for me, then I need to not work with them, because there will always be plenty of people who are the dream clients or customers out there for me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still even going through that now, even just about the whole proposal process, right? Once there was a book called Win Without Pitching, and it talks about the fact that actually we should really be paid for our thinking that goes into those pitches. And it was really life-changing for me. I did not realize that, wait a second, I could win this account without pitching, that I should be paid for that time. And so now, you know, when people ask for proposals, I say to them, you know, happy to accommodate you, but I need some sort of buy-in from you that this is even something you want before I invest the time to do that for you. Because, you know, someone once taught me, if you haven't sold someone in person, your proposal, it will not sell them. So you're going to be wasting your time doing that. I think it's a really, you know, powerful takeaway and tip. And I can't tell you how much time I spent on these amazing, beautiful proposals that ultimately no one reads, because they can't just say, sorry, I'm not interested. So instead right. They say, can I have a proposal? Anyone who's ever hired me actually didn't ask for a proposal. What they asked for was a contract.
Wow, that's a really good thing to share. And I think you're absolutely right with being able to just sell people in person, and they won't really need that proposal.
Yeah, so I think some of those fundamental skills of learning how to push back a little bit and say, listen, I'm happy to do this, but are we good on the terms? Are we good here on the start date? Are we good on the budget? Are we good on how you're on the payment terms, on all those things? 9 out of 10 times, someone's going to say, wait a second, no, I'm not. And so I don't need to send a full-blown proposal to hear you say no or yes to that. And so I just think you really want to get that from someone first before you spend your time doing all this other stuff. I'm not saying don't write the proposal, but what I am saying is protect your time.
Absolutely. Chris, you've shared such amazing advice that I know our listeners will totally value and really basically excel in once they actually apply it to their own lives. And so now I'd love if you could share where our listeners can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Sure. So you can follow me on Twitter at Sparkling Ruby, or Instagram as Chris Ruby. My website is rubymediagroup.com, chrisruby.com, and medicalpracticepr.com. And I suppose the podcast I launched, the Chris Ruby Show, can be found on all of the podcast sites, I guess, like Apple too. I haven't done as many episodes as you have. I just started, but you know, hopefully that will grow too.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll make sure to put those links in the show notes. That way, in case anyone missed it from here, they can go through and click and connect with you. But Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Ashley.
Thanks so much for listening today. I'd love it if you could subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with those who could use it most. For show notes and more information, go to studenttoceo.com/podcast.